Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're sorry we missed a week, but if y'all don't know, Adam lives in California, and California is currently not having a good time. So
no, we're not.
So we had to skip a week.
Yes, we did, because, the fires really affected me. I actually had to evac for a day. That was kind of some scary shit, but we are back. I'm not going to talk to you about that other than to say that it really did affected my viewing habits, of course, but we still have some stuff to talk about, because California is coming back. We're going to rebuild. My house is still intact.
I saw Kevin Smith's before and after video. And that, not that it didn't have, I didn't have perspective. I did. I'm not, callous fuck. But, seeing the fire, so close to his house, and then seeing it, him there, either the next day or the day after, and them having stopped it from getting any further towards his house, was holy shit. This is, it's not just... he is up there, but it's not Paris Hilton lost her mansion, I'm sorry for Paris Hilton, but
if anybody needed to be reminded of the true heroes of the world, which are the firefighters, not the other people that... The other ones, I'm not going to say their names because I don't want to get into it, but if you wanted to know who the true heroes are, the first responders, the firefighters of LA have don't get it twisted. There was no way they could have saved the Palisades because it was 100 mile an hour winds. Yeah. But the job they did after those winds so they could get in there was literally amazing. I cannot explain to you guys if you guys weren't here.
Are you pull up the you can go to YouTube and look at the videos or people just people breaking it down, and it's pretty incredible. And it's really I saw some video of some people I'm assuming probably up in the Palisades. I don't know. Trying to save their horses and yes. stuff like that. And it is fucking heartbreaking, man. Literally there's a wall of fire in front of them and they're trying to get their horses out. And it's so upsetting. Anyway. I know we don't need to dwell on that because it's literally your backyard,
it's something that really affected a lot of people, and it's just not that's the other thing that I want to make clear is that I think that what people didn't understand that I think that they understand now is that LA isn't just celebrities. We're working class people here. And that working class people that have been here for generations working to create a home and a house, not just houses, but homes for themselves, and just to have it lost. And it's anybody who decides to say that this is some bullshit or make a joke about it, fuck you. This is not, LA is not a, we're not all six-figure incomes or seven-figure incomes. We are a town that, we're a town that, has been built on working class people. I'm working class. I'm not super rich. right? Like what everything I've had, I've worked for myself for. And it's just like, to see us, like, you know, I think the weirder part for everybody is to, like, you know, the whole joke that LA is disconnected, and we're not. We're a community. Like, we are a melting pot that decided to get together because we knew that nobody else was going to help us except for the thing. I might get emotional about this, but like the thing that broke me was when I started seeing the videos of the Mexican firefighters and the Canadian firefighters. Like, it just,
they had prisoners out there fighting the fires.
Yeah. Oh God, don't even get me started on the prisoners and like that whole thing. That hit me hard too, because it was like they're out there risking their lives for pennies on the dollar. And like the worst part about this is like, you know that like they have this program, right? And some of these kids, when they get out, they have more hours and experience than any of the applicants that are applying for LA Fire Department. And they can't.
Yeah, and they can't. Yeah.
Like, they can't apply anywhere. They can't apply anywhere because they're felons. I don't know who would need to, like, what state could do this, but like someplace like Iowa or Montana, if they were smart, they would lift that ban, because you would get literally thousands of firefighters to fight your fires in like areas that are like smoke seasons that are super dangerous, and you would have a fleet of people that could help you in that era, because it's only going to get worse. I mean, that's the saddest part about this, is that, you know, climate deniers, climate change deniers, you guys can continue to do that, but when it comes to you, like I think that this is proven to a lot of people in LA. I would be very surprised if they have something mentally wrong with them. Like, if you after this, if you've experienced this and you were a climate change denier, I'd be very like, you mentally have something wrong with you, or your IQ is so low that you cannot process anything. That you're going to deny everything. Like, you know, enough about my totem polling things, because like,
want to stick with the bummer stuff and talk about, we lost.
Let's do it.
I haven't discussed this with you, but let's talk about David Lynch first. Yes. So, Monday at work, my mom called me, and you may remember him. He worked with us and wrote some stuff for Film Dispenser, but I had a friend named Brick Barker. He did a couple of podcasts with us. He wrote a bunch of reviews for Film Dispenser. He passed away Monday.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. He had a lot of bad health problems. He had open heart surgery last year, and he could never really recover. And so unfortunately, I didn't get to go to his funeral. They had it very, very quickly. So I didn't get to go, but it was weird, because my mom went, and it was in a church, and he was not a churchy person necessarily. He liked pageantry, but he wasn't really a churchy person. So it would have been really, really strange it was weird when we had Ryan's funeral and the service was in the church, and like, it was just very, very weird, but that wasn't my call. But anyway, so he passed away Monday. It's been a while since I talked to him, unfortunately. And I mean, that's just going to be my cross to bear. We don't have to get into that, but I posted just this like very brief thing on Facebook. This is the guy that two things very specifically he's responsible for introducing me to. One of them is Watchmen. I still have the trade paperback of Watchmen that he handed me and was like, you like comics and you haven't read this, you need to read this. And I did. And I still have that copy along with, for some reason, like 7 or 8 other versions of that story in different formats, but that's whatever. And David Lynch's Dune, I remember sitting in his house, watching this movie. He was like, you've got to watch, you love Star Wars, you got to watch Dune. And he showed it to me. Probably, he may have had it on Laserdisc. We may have watched it on Laserdisc.
That's great.
But it was before, well before DVD. So it was very surreal to then, Wednesday? Not 2 days later? Mm-hmm. Wake up and see a text from you saying, somebody else had passed away, but also that David Lynch had passed away. And I'm going to put this out there and then I'll let you, I'm not a Lynch guy.
Yeah.
I've seen Dune. I've seen, tried to watch because of Dune and my friend Brick, back when you could not get a hold of Twin Peaks, but for some reason the movie was out there. I tried to watch Fire Walk With Me, did not understand it. I've seen Mulholland Drive. I know I've seen, what's one of the other big ones?
Lost Highway?
I may have seen Lost Highway.
Blue Velvet?
Think I've seen Blue Velvet.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's none of those movies outside of Dune, and Dune specifically just because of how fucking strange it all is. None of it ever really stuck with me. I appreciate who he is, what he did, what he means to people.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just not my thing, you know?
I was talking with our mutual friend and friends of the show and also ex-writer of Film Dispenser, Scott Phillips. And the thing about Lynch is that from the get-go with Eraserhead, his first film that he made in college that took him 5 years to make, he has been an uncompromising artist, not a filmmaker, but an artist, right? His movie, these are not, with the exception of Dune, when he tried to my favorite thing about David Lynch is that George Lucas really wanted him to make Return of the Jedi. And they had a meeting.
Which would have been my favorite David Lynch film, I'm sure.
But when he saw the thing goes is that he went, they had a meeting. And he read the script, and then Lucas started showing him pictures, art design, and he loved Jabba, which makes sense, right? He loved Jabba. But then when he saw the Ewoks, he just kind of looked at him and it disconnected for him. He didn't know what to do. He was like, it's puppies in space. And he just walked away. And I love that about Lynch. That's one of my favorite stories about Lynch, is that just the uncompromising nature of him. I get why he did Dune. It wasn't because there was something in Dune that called to him, the weirdness, the strangeness, the uncompromising nature of a wake. He made waking dreams and waking nightmares, mostly waking nightmares. There's a nightmare. There's a logic to his films that go beyond just they're not some people truly say, oh, yeah, it's a nightmare logic movie. No, he really literally extracted out the nightmares and his issues with the world out onto screen. You watch Eraserhead, man. Eraserhead is the scariest movie about fatherhood ever. I feel like I saw it so young that it kind of changed me and made me not want to be a father. I know that's kind of weird and confessional, but I feel like Eraserhead kind of melded my brain into thinking about fatherhood as a nightmare and never wanted to be a father, like never, ever, because of that movie. It's that scary. But like, I don't know, like he was an uncompromising artist. Now, he wasn't even a filmmaker. Like you can't really say things like Mulholland Drive is a movie. It's kind of not. It doesn't make sense. Like there's no sense or logic.
It's like he made art installations and like those weird, it's like, yeah, I don't know what's happening here.
Exactly.
And for some people, it really, really connects. And I am so happy for those people, but there's such a disconnect for me that like, this sounds horrible, but like reading David Lynch passed away, it just made me sadder that I had also lost my friend that week. Oh, the only connection I have to David Lynch also passed away this week. And like, it's weird because as an artist, as a filmmaker, I don't connect with the dude, but then like I read things like interviews and like his little stories he tells, and that is the stuff that I'm like, yeah, that's a really interesting, smart dude, and
yeah,
a true like talented individual. And that's where I'm just like, oh yeah, I like David Lynch. I don't like David Lynch's art. It doesn't connect for me. But like the person, I really understand, you know?
The artist. Yeah, the artist. Understand
but
the artist.
It's just the art doesn't mean anything to me.
I'm going to suggest to everybody, because it's on Disney Plus, to watch what he considers one of his favorite experiences in making a movie. You may have already seen it and not known it was a David Lynch movie. It's one of my favorite. It is so hard to watch because it's one of my grandfather's. It was one of my grandfather's last favorite movies. Something that I was surprised. He never went to go see movies in the theaters after a certain point, right? But he had told me about it, and like I was shocked that he had saw this movie. I can't see it anymore because it's one of those movies that's pure Americana, which he kind of deals with. But also, it's just a simple story. It's called The Straight Story. Stars Richard Farnsworth. As a man who's in his 70s, and you probably heard this story because it's also a documentary, and it was also a real American story or This American Life story about a man, Alvin Strait, who in his 70s, who had his license taken away from him, took his John Deere mini tractor.
I've heard this story.
And took it from, like, you know, like in Iowa to Wisconsin, where his brother lived, who was dying, and drove it all the way there. And it's this wonderful, beautiful story. Like when I think of America, and I think of America from a certain time frame, I think of this movie. Like, and it's just Richard Farnsworth on this tractor as he drives to go see his brother. And I won't tell you who his brother's played by, but his brother is played by another great American actor. And it's just his interactions with people. And it's a wonderful movie. Like if you didn't connect with anything from David Lynch, this is David Lynch going, I do dream of America and a beautiful America. And this is what I dream of when I dream of America. Yeah. Like, and man, like, it's a wallop of a movie. It's so tiny, but it's so epic. And it's the perfect David Lynch movie because it's such a strange, unique story. But when you watch it, anybody could watch this movie and connect with it. I don't care if you're 8 or 80. It's one of those like universal movies that you just watch and you go, after it, you go, holy shit, this is a truly great American movie. Like, yeah. John Ford could have directed it if he was alive. Like that's the kind of great Americana it is. So yeah, with that, we will, like, you know, dip it. If you've never dipped your toe into it, go for it.
And I let me just one more thing that I can say I have appreciation for him for, like, the first film, the first on-screen performance of Kyle MacLachlan comes because David Lynch saw something and was like, this is my Paul Atreides. This is the guy that's going to lead the cast of Dune. I mean, he was unknown.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, the movie was not what the studio wanted it to be, which is weird because it's also not what David Lynch wanted it to be. So,
yeah, exactly.
It's one of those things where it's like you hired a guy for his weirdness, then didn't let him make the weird movie. And so we're now stuck. Well, now we have the new movies, but we were for the longest time stuck with this adaptation of this movie that neither one of you wanted to make. But anyway, Kyle MacLachlan, I mean, his little in memoriam like thing that he posted was so incredibly sweet. And also, like, true. I mean, I'm sure Kyle MacLachlan's so fucking talented. He would have wound up in something. But,
yes,
like, the career that he's had is because David Lynch was like, no, you're my guy. And he just kept being his guy, you know? Like, they had such a, like, sweet friendship, you know? And... Mm-hmm. It was that was really, really moving to read. I love Kyle MacLachlan. I think he has, like, it's hard to say he's underrated. I think he's underappreciated, and he's also just, I hope I read it right, seems to just choose what he wants to do, rather than, like, you know, chasing anything.
Well, so that the Desperate Housewives, like he's talked about it. He said that Desperate Housewives, like, he's had certain things in his life. Like, Twin Peaks was a, like, I don't think that people realized the TV show was such a cultural phenomenon that he made a lot of money off of that. And then he also made a lot of money off of Desperate Housewives, which allowed him to just basically pick and choose whatever the hell he wanted to do after that. You know, and so, like, things like
one of my favorite Kyle MacLachlan. Sorry, I cut you off.
No,
my favorite Kyle MacLachlan performances, and this sounds so fucking weird. He is in a handful of episodes of How I Met Your Mother as this character, the captain, and it's so batshit and so weird, and like he's just fun. And I love that performance. So, like, thinking about, we don't get that without David Lynch is, you know, like, that's kind of also how I can connect to Lynch, is just through the career of this actor who, you know, may not have been the star that he is without David Lynch.
Oh, absolutely not. He is to David Lynch what Robert De Niro is to Martin Scorsese. He's just like, there's just the art, like, he is, like, I hate to use it because it sounds so crass, but he is one of the paintbrushes, one of the major paintbrushes and colors that David Lynch used to paint. Like, of course, there were other people, but like his major works, for better or for worse, have been tied to each other in a way that cannot be untied, and it defines some of their work. Like Blue Velvet, Twin Peaks, are two of the pillars of David Lynch's career. Like, it's what defines him. Like like the underbelly of the American dream of apple pie, coffee, and, like, you know, wholesomeness, and Kyle MacLachlan is his, like, like is the face of that, of the Americana. And it's yeah, I mean, Kyle MacLachlan, like, you, I think that you are right that he is very underappreciated. And I think it's all like it has a lot to do with the fact that, like, he is so traditionally good looking, like, that people just kind of take that for granted, right? And,
yeah. Like, have you ever seen the Hamlet movie back that was, what, like 2000 with Ethan Hawke and him? Yes. And yeah, like Sam Shepard, Bill Murray's in it. Mm-hmm. It's just so fucking good, man. like
my favorite thing, my favorite non-Lynch thing that he ever did was The Hidden. I love him Hidden because he plays an alien, and it makes perfect sense when you watch that movie. You go, yeah, he is a fucking alien.
Yeah,
he's like, I mean, even recent work, like he's in Confess Fletch.
And yeah, that was really good. Hell, yeah. He was in this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and like absolutely phenomenal. So yeah, it's you know, it's like I said, I'm pretty sure Kyle MacLachlan would have been out there anyway because he's extremely talented. But you know, it's Lynch letting him, like, because Lynch is weird enough, but he lets him be this weird eccentric character. And so, like, very early, like literally at the start of Kyle MacLachlan's career, you get to see him stretch into things that you don't really get to see a lot of actors do until they're more well known, and they're like, well, I want to do this weird shit, you know. And he started his career doing the weird shit. So yeah, it's very, very sad. Just all around a sad week, because we also lost Bob Uecker this week, which connects two things that we love. Three things, really.
Yeah.
Sports, television, and film. Because if you grew up when we grew up, like, Bob Uecker was all three of those things.
He really was
a sports broadcaster, a like just a ambassador for baseball. He was an actor on a television show that we watched every week. Called Mr. Belvedere.
Belvedere, that everybody is convinced that that Marilyn Manson was on. He wasn't.
Yeah.
Stop that shit.
and then he was in films, specifically the major league films, but plenty of other films as well. But I mean, the major league mark, like, there are, like, there are things he says in that movie that are now in the lexicon.
Yes.
Like,
very much so.
It's such a brilliant performance that just, I mean, I don't even know what to say about it.
Well, Harry Doyle literally set the standard for announcers in sports movies.
Yes.
Like, I don't think, like, before, yeah, there were some, but, like, he literally, like, anybody who has played a sports announcer walks in the shadow of Bob Uecker as Harry Doyle. Like, literally does. Like, and the best part about that performance is it's an actual performance, because there's an arc to Harry Doyle in the first movie. And you don't recognize it the first time you watch it. It's like the fifth time. Like,
this guy's so fucking fed up with having to be the guy for this team.
You just watch it, and he starts off drunk as fuck, but as they start winning, he gets sober, and his colored commentator, his right-hand man gets drunker as they go on, so they change, but he never says anything. His side guy never says anything, but Harry, like, stops from being a drunk to actually being a great announcer. But Euchre, just as a side point, like, so my dad was a my dad is from Milwaukee. He grew up in Milwaukee. Where that's how I became a Green Bay fan, was because, like, he was born in Green Bay. They moved around. They moved to Madison for a while. Wisconsinites will know what I'm talking about. And then they settled in Milwaukee, where it was first the Milwaukee Braves, then they moved to Atlanta and became the Milwaukee Brewers. And my dad, like, he became the announcer when my dad was, like, for three seasons, my dad followed him, and then they moved to California. But my dad never forgot Euchre because he was the dude. Like, he was the dude, the Milwaukee Brewers. Like, he was Vince Scully. He was the Vince Scully of the Milwaukee Brewers because he announced them for 54 years. 54 years! And my dad just knew, like, he was also, like, he had a late night, like, he was always on late night talk shows. My dad always remembered him. He got the name Mr. Baseball. He from Carson. Like, so when you get named Mr. Baseball from Carson, it sticks, right? Like, you are Mr. Baseball. But what I remember him for, the first thing I remember him for, because my dad made a big deal about it, was WrestleMania 3.
Yep.
And he did the color commentary, and I will never forget it because, like, I still remember even now, because I was nine when WrestleMania 3 was there, and it was the event of all events, regardless of what you think of him now. He's a piece of shit. Hulk Hogan. It was Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. And I mean, when you were a kid, like, I begged and begged my dad to fucking to buy WrestleMania 3 because that was the only way you could do it. $49.95, right? Back when $49.95 was a lot of goddamn money in 87, right? It's probably like $200 now in adjusted grosses. But I think that half the reason why my dad did it was because he heard that Euchre was announcing it, and that legitimized it for him. I that's what I will remember him for forever, because that's how I remembered. That's how I was introduced to Euchre, was Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan and that fucking match. And nobody, if you listen to it, if you watch it now, you could actually listen to Euchre's commentary and not need to see the shitty video that goes along with it, because he comes from a time where, you know, for a long time he was just on the radio. So, like, Scully, like, there's this additional kind of, like, commentary where he says things, he uses his words to describe it without sounding stupid, and there's just so much, like, it's a true color commentary. Like when I that hit hard, like, even though he lived a great life, a full life, like Vince did, it hurt because he was one of the pillars, right? I mean, yeah. He has a statue. He has a fucking statue.
Dude, I sent you that one picture. Have you seen it in the days since?
Yes. And it breaks, like, my heart, but it makes it, me
it's so good. Fucking sweet, man. So, like, he was also the spokesman, which helped, like, get him into everybody's life for Miller Lite, right?
Lite.
And so, like, right after his death, there was a picture taken of the statue, and it just had one lone unopened can of Miller Lite sitting in front of the statue. But in the days since he passed away, like, there's jerseys and flowers and cases of beer, and it, like, the statue is just, like, it's just tons of stuff, and it's so incredibly sweet. The man was so beloved, and also, like, I don't want to get into problematic people, but, like, I it sucks that he died. It sucks that he had lung cancer. It sucks. It just sucks. He was 90, but he got to do what he loved for his entire life. And unless there's something we just don't know, was a fucking unproblematic human being. Like,
yep.
And it is nice to just be able to be like, I'm incredibly sad that somebody that meant, you know, just a little something to my world passed away. But it's nice to not have to feel any kind of like, yeah, but there was, you know, those 10 years where, you know, it.
Yeah. It really is nice, right? Like, just to like know that he was a good dude. He wasn't a piece of shit. He didn't do anything terrible. And it's just kind of like nice to just go, yeah, that's like, you know, he lived a good life, and not like, oh man, I'm sad, but you know, there was that time when he did this, and it's just like, no, he was just a all around good dude. Like, and you, like you said, like, yeah, he died of lung cancer and he was smoking, but everybody fucking smoked back in the day. Everybody chewed chaw and shit. And it's just, and like,
from what they said, it was a fairly short battle. So
yeah,
like, you know, he got to finish out his season. I think they all knew it was going to be his last season last year, no matter what.
Yeah.
But so here's my, I don't know. It's, I don't know if it's my favorite Bob Uecker story. It's one that if you follow Bob Uecker, you know, but if you don't, so he was a player, not a remarkable one, but he was a player. He played for Milwaukee, like Adam was saying. And back in, I don't know what year it was, 60 something, 64. He was on a team with, Bob Gibson.
Yeah, he was on the Cardinals. Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't know, Bob Gibson is a black baseball player, or was. And they were taking the team photo, and Bob Uecker and Gibson were holding hands and like leaning against each other, very romantic like, in the team picture. And this is in 1963, 64, somewhere in there, when like now it would be like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. But back then, like, if that photo gets out, that's a scandal. That's a scandal. And it's something that at the time could easily, again, not a great baseball player, but it definitely could have cost Bob Uecker his career. And he didn't care, man. He thought it was funny. They were both fined by the team because they had to retake the picture when it was, it wasn't like today, you know, a digital picture, you see it immediately. You know, this is whatever, a week later, they get the pictures back and these two fools are holding hands like they just got married. And so they were both fined. They had to retake the picture. I mean, you can see it online now, but again, like at the time, it could have definitely been a scandal and cost at least one or both of them. You know, definitely could have cost Bob Uecker his career. So, because he was not a remarkable baseball player. And
yeah, he
wasn't. It's just, That's who he was, man. Like, and
that's who he always was,
yeah.
Right? Like, he's always a trickster, a jokester. He made, like, he was a charmer. From everything that everybody has said, that Uecker was a charmer. Like, he was, like, he had this ineffable ability to make you smile. And, man, like, you know, it's like, we don't have people like that anymore. Like, I love the fact that he's like Vince, where he was a baseball player, but he wasn't a very good one. But yeah, man, what hell, like, he knew the game inside and out, like, and knew, like, he just had the right thing, right? Like, he, and the thing that I love most about him is that he never gave up announcing. Like, even when he was on Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah, now he still did it.
Like, they went around his schedule.
Did you watch his, I got all up in my feels and watched, I think ESPN posted it, or it might've been MLB, but if you Google, Bob Uecker, calls, there's about a 20 minute video of just him making like play-by-play calls that like just uninterrupted just for 20 minutes. And the first one they show is his Hall of Fame speech. And it's so sweet and so funny. And like one of the first things he says is like, I got to say, I'm a little upset that I'm not going into the Hall of Fame as a player. But they cut to the audience and everybody's laughing. But the audience is full of people that you would like. Bob Costas is sitting out there in the audience. And I mean, of course he is, but
yeah,
I mean, Bob Costas is legendary announcer. And
yeah,
he's out there looking at Bob Uecker like, this is my hero, you know? And it's so incredibly sweet. But listening to his calls for the Brewers games, it's, mm-hmm, you know, it's like listening to Harry Carey, man. Like, just, it means something more when it's coming from them. And, like, it's sad, man. It was a real bummer to read that he passed away. And it's, you know, kind of sad revisiting some of that stuff. But, like, I don't know. You can probably also go to YouTube and just put in Bob Uecker, you know, baseball or major league scenes, and just that play by play from him in major league. It's like they brought him in and said, we're not going to give you a script. Say all of the things you know you can't say when you're doing an actual broadcast and you're so fed up with the team. Like, just say those things.
my fate, like, you know, and everybody does it now, is just a bit outside.
Yeah, just
a bit outside.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's in the lexicon. Like, like, that's something that people would say, sure, but when you see it in the movie, it's the ball so far, like, beyond the like, so yeah, saying just about, like, no, it was a mile outside. So, yeah. But now when you're watching a baseball game, you'll hear somebody try to do that just a bit outside. Like, somebody does it in every game.
Yes, every game. And that's the kind of, like, imprint that he left. Like, I think that it was David Ward's commentary for the writer director of Major League, he literally says that he just let Uecker go. Like, he had a kind of, he knew, like, basically he described to Uecker what was going to happen during the color play commentary, like what the scene was about, and he just let Uecker roll. Like, everything, like, that he said was basically scripted but done with a Uecker flair. Like, he wanted Uecker to do whatever he like, the charm that Uecker brought to color commentary. But he also, like, he also knew that Uecker could do a, like, you know, he was a performer, he was an actor by that point. You know, Belvedere had been on for, I think, at least 4 years by that point. It was almost on its last season, and he was just like this is the arc of the character. And it was kind of wonderful to listen to, like, Ward talk about how it was so much of a collaboration and not just a, like, I was telling him how to be fun. Like, he knew how to be fun. He knew what he was doing. I mean, he worked on a fucking, like that's the thing that I loved about Uecker, was that he wasn't just a one guy. He was literally truly a Renaissance man. Like, he there wasn't, like, he could play sports, he could comment. He was even a writer. Like, he was a writer because he wrote sports. He wrote his like, you know, his, all of his stuff. And he was a star. I mean, he was literally on one of the most popular TV shows, sitcoms, for what, 5 years or 6 years? I think it went from 83 to 88, yeah. 89. You know, so, like, just a true Renaissance man beyond. And then he always, like, his first love. baseball. And he always kept that. He always
That's
kept
what he talks about in his Hall of Fame speech. He said, baseball has always been number one for me. Like, despite being movies, television shows, the commercials, the talk shows, all of it, baseball was always number one. It's always where my heart's been. And, you know, I know that there's going to be something special, like opening day next year, maybe all of next season for the Brewers. But, it's a sad, sad day in baseball, man. But
it really is.
What a hell of a career, dude.
Yeah. Like, I mean, so the three legends are gone now, right?
Yeah.
Harry Carey, Vince, and Bob, and Euchre. Like, they're all, but the weird part is you knew who you were talking about when you talked the first name, even if you'd never heard them comment. If I said Harry, you knew who I was talking about when it was baseball, right? If I said Vince, you knew who I was talking about. If you said Bob, you knew who I was talking about. Like, that's a weird thing that we'll never get back. Like, we will never get back. Like the commentators for baseball were things of legend. Like, so much so, like, my favorite thing about Harry Carey is so much so that Will Ferrell loved him so much that he did this wild ass character based off of like the Harry Carey stuff. All you have to do is look up Will Ferrell, Saturday Night Live, Harry Carey skits, and you will find a plethora of like deep rooted weird ass sketches where he plays Harry Carey like on a science show, and just Jesus Christ, it was great. But yeah, like, it's an end of an era. I feel like it'd be so sad. The thinking about it was that the greats, the three pillars of baseball commentators, that all lasted what? They all went like on a run for 50 or 60 years. They announced it. Yeah. Like, you know, and all like, you know, Euchre, I think, is the only one that stayed until he literally died in the chair. Like, I was thinking about it, and it's just like, man, how do you do that? Like, how do you follow that up? Like, it's just like Vince, like, and he hasn't, like, the guys that have announced, they don't, it makes me, this is the time where it's almost like I want AI voices, because it's just something about like this year, watching the Dodgers win, it was a little empty because Vince wasn't there.
Yeah.
Like, and it made me like, I got choked up because the last time they won was like Vince was there. And like, yeah, you can say whatever you want about the bubble run. Like, but I don't think that, like, I don't take it away from them.
And the thing, and I know that, like, the Dodgers are a big market team, so they had a bigger appeal than like the Brewers, but it's also Cubs kind of similarly, but
yeah.
They're hometown announcers that were bigger than the hometown. Like,
yes, very much,
you know,
so.
And that doesn't, like, we all know who Bob Costas is. If you watch sports, you know Bob Costas. But he's a guy that works for a network. These are people that worked for the team. Now, I mean, Vince Scully did other things too, but you know, you knew who Harry Carey was, and that's what he did. He was just a Cubs announcer. Like, I mean, he did other things. He, you know, he showed up here and there and, you know, did late night stuff. And, you know, of course he had sons that went on to, I mean, famously Braves announcers. But you know, it doesn't matter. Like, they were the hometown announcers for those teams. And were also, I mean, world famous to a degree.
Yeah.
And that's just not something that happens much now. Like, because all the announcers, when you get to see the teams, are usually network announcers, not the hometown guys. And, you know, that's, you know, kind of sucks, really. Like,
it really
does. I don't, you know, it, like, if the Braves were playing the Cubs, listening to Harry announce them he's definitely got the Cubs bias, and if you're a Braves fan, that's very frustrating. But
yes,
it's also like there's something else to it, you know? Like you, it's just it's not the same listening to those network guys. So
it really isn't. It really isn't. Like I said, like it's an end of an era because it's just something about it. There's something about their personality, their voice. Like, everybody sounds the same, but Uecker didn't sound like anybody else, and nobody will ever sound like Uecker. Harry, like, nobody sounded like Harry. Sounded like Harry. Like, you know, you could drink a fifth of vodka, and you still wouldn't sound like Harry.
Yeah. Like, I mean, nobody sounds like Scully either. Like, those, you know, there's a really, it kind of loses it in the third season. But there's a really kind of sweet show that Hank Azaria did a couple of years ago. I can't think of the name of it.
It's not Loudermilk. I want to say Loudermilk because it's a... oh, God, what is the show? Good Lord. Give me 2 seconds and I will... Brockmire,
yeah.
Close to Loudermilk, but Brockmire, yes.
Where he plays an announcer that he's kind of pulling from all three of those guys.
Yes.
And doing like his own version of that. And like I said, it kind of loses a lot of steam in the third season because it like jumps to the future and like it's very bizarre. But at least the first season, it's so fun to see him kind of do this like love letter to those kind of announcers. And a lot of love for that.
Isn't it in the third season that JK shows up as a kind of a Euchre-esque kind of dude?
I think so, yeah.
I can't remember what season it is because I did watch it because of you. Like you told me about, you had told me about it. I think it's the second to last season, or maybe it's the second season where JK shows up and he's literally kind of like Euchre. Like he's like a Euchre-esque guy, whereas like Azaria is like all of them put together, but more of the Harry because he's a drunk. Like I love that show, Brockmire. Like when, as soon as you talked to me about it, I was like, okay, I gotta check this out. And then I don't think we actually talked about it. Like I devoured the entire, because it's only like, I think it's only like 30 episodes. It's a very short lived TV series, and it's like 30 minutes long, right? But it's great. Like it's pretty great. I really did like that show. But
guys, 32 episodes over 4 seasons. So, eight episodes a season? Yeah. Very, very short. It was on like IFC back when they were trying to do original stuff. They had Brockmire, and then they had that show with John Hamm. And I can't remember the name of it. John Hamm wasn't the star, but it was. That's going to drive me nuts, man. What was the name of that freaking show? All right, I'm looking that up because it'll drive me nuts. Not Fargo. I can't find the name of it. John Hamm, I forget all the shit John Hamm's just down to do until I look at his IMDb and I'm just like, oh yeah. This is in like so, everything.
So stupid. Like just so stupid. Like I did love his Fletch. Like I wish they would make more Fletches. Like actually it should be a TV show. To be perfectly honest, like it felt like a good pilot for the beginning of like a TV series.
Todd Margaret. That was the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret.
Todd Margaret, yes.
Yeah. David Cross.
I know that
was a fun show. Will Arnett, David Cross, like it's just so fun. But anyway, yeah, it's been quite the sad ass week. So
yeah, why don't we kind of talk? Like, okay, so we kind of texted about this last night. And so like, I kind of want to, let's change it to something that's actually a little bit more fun and a little bit brighter. So we both kind of like, I think we both had the same sentiment, was like, oh man, it's coming out that soon. We just got the specs and we got a video for Switch 2, the Nintendo gaming platform, literally releasing in sometime in April or May.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but like, I'm kind of genuinely excited for this, this what looks to be an all around upgrade, but also like a thing that Nintendo has not done that they finally listened to all of us about, with the exception of, actually, it's not true because there is a precedence within their mobile gaming platforms. The ability to play both old Switch games and new Switch games, because they're not changing the cartridges. They're not changing the SD card thing.
Yeah, it's the first time in a while that you're able to port, like not have to buy new games or keep your old, which I mean, I'll keep my Switch anyway.
Oh yeah.
But you know, keep your old device so that you can still play the old games and not have to buy some kind of, you know, expansion slot or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, so, jailbreak I think, it or some shit.
Yeah. So the Wii could play GameCube games if you did something.
You had to do a whole bunch of shit to make it work. And even then, there were only certain games. It was the latter day games that you could do. You couldn't do the old games. So that made, basically, you had to keep your GameCube, right? Because it was proprietary. I mean, though, I will say this much about Nintendo. Like, the one thing that I love about Nintendo that I feel like has been lost on everybody is that their hardware ages beautifully. Like, I've not ever, like, I mean, think about it. How many NESs, like, I only went through two NESs. Like, I still have my Super Nintendo because it was top.
You gotta like fool with it to get it to work, but generally you can get it to work. So, and the only reason, I think the only reason the NES has that problem is because of the like the push down
thing.
If it was just an insert, you wouldn't like, because I don't think Super Nintendos have that issue at all.
No, they don't. They don't.
Which is probably why they switched from the like push down, you know, insert push down to just thing. Like top down, you know,
top loading. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the like GameCubes, the only reason why they don't work is when the engine blows out. But I still know.
My GameCube, still got my N64, still got the only one I don't have is a Super Nintendo. And those have like other, like I can order one off eBay, but like even the places around here that sell use stuff, like I cannot find a Super Nintendo. So I'm honestly thinking about just ordering one of those, I forget what they're called, that do like everything. That's not, it's not a Nintendo, but you know, one of the, it'll do like Genesis and Super Nintendo, Nintendo. Yeah. One of those things, just so I can have something that'll play Super Nintendo games until I can find an actual working Super Nintendo. But I was gonna say, I recently just went to McKay's, this place that I've talked about before, and got a used Game Boy Advance because I was like, you know what? I wouldn't mind replaying some Game Boy Advance games. I found one, a purple one that I liked, and I was like, I'm going to get that. So I bought a couple of games. I forget how small the damn screen on that thing is.
Super small, dude.
I'm so used to playing the Switch.
Yep.
Oh, I was like, oh God, this is so tiny. I can't see anything. But, you know, it's still fun. So, it's exciting. I watched the video. The upgrade to the joysticks is weirdly the thing I'm maybe most excited for.
Yes. Like, that is wild, right? Like, the way that they figured out a new way to do it, and then also supposedly supposed to be a mouse stick also, yeah, like, can be, yeah, there's a mouse. Wow. You know, that is super exciting. It just all around looks like a better, like an upgraded version. Like, the hardware too. Like, the hardware is on par with, like, they're always, like, the weirdest part about Nintendo is that they're always about 2 to 3 generations behind.
Yeah.
But what I've heard, like, from the power specs, it's literally the same specs as a PS4 Pro. So literally the last edition, like, we're literally only the portability of it is only one behind.
What do you think about the hard rumor? Like, it's right at, like, oh, it's definitely happening that we're getting at least the Master Chief Collection ported to the Nintendo Switch.
That is wild. Like, wild in a way that I don't think that, like, I haven't processed it yet, just because of the fact that it's like to have that series, but also it to be a recalibrate, like a remastered version of it.
Yeah. Truly, like, worthwhile. I know that you can play it portably. Like, I know, yeah, that, you know, if you have a Steam Deck, like, I know you can do it. But, like, a cartridge version of that game that's portable, mm-hmm, that, like, I don't know. It seems, I'm with you, like, wild is the, it just, that's crazy. And for it to be on a device that isn't, you know, run by Microsoft or run off of some kind of Windows platform. It's crazy and exciting and opens the door for the first time for Nintendo to, I mean, it's right up there with, like, oh shit, I can play Sonic. Like, that seems Sonic so weird to people now.
Yeah.
But when it happened and Sega was no longer in the console business, and suddenly you could play Sonic on Nintendo or on a PlayStation, or it was like, wait, what? I can play Sonic on my PlayStation? Like, it's right up there with that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, and it also kind of, like, so, like, we've heard rumors about PS6. We've heard, like, you know, we've heard that, like, we've officially heard the lifespan of PS5, right?
I mean,
like,
what's the next thing for them? Like, I understand the graphics will be better. Like, okay. But, like, what are Nintendo always seems to be adding to the playability. And I just don't, what is Xbox and PlayStation, what are they going to do?
Well, that's the thing, is that Xbox hasn't announced anything. I think that they're officially going to phase out of
just consoles altogether?
Console. Yeah, I think so. I think that this is their last stand. And they're going to go, like, what gave me it was the fact that the Master Chief trilogy is coming to Switch. Like, but then also when Nintendo started, like, letting the rumors out that Switch is coming, that PlayStation, Sony started talking about the end of the lifespan, the end of the life cycle of a PS5, which is looking like to be the end of 2027. So, like, we've got still, like, another 2 or 3 years, because they know that they can juice out more of this system, because the system isn't even close to getting to its max, right? Because we're barely getting to the point where PS5 games are looking better than PS4 games. And usually, like, I didn't realize how well into PS4 where we were, where the PS4 games looked better than the PS3 games, which is a very weird kind of thing. But Xbox has been silent about their plans. And I feel like they're at the end of their console. I think that
their last one is not, like, it didn't have, like, I don't really hear a lot of people talking. Like, I hear a lot of PS5 talk still, but I don't hear a lot of Xbox. But it also doesn't help that the fucking the way they name their consoles is so damn confusing. It was, what was the last one?
Xbox 360, the Xbox Series X.
Yeah, like Series X. Xbox so it's X. It was Xbox, Xbox 360, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, right? Or something like that. That's problematic, man.
Yeah, I know.
Like I don't know which. When I go look at the games, I have to force myself. Like, you have an Xbox One. You have an Xbox One. You, because like I know I'm gonna wind up forgetting. Like with the when it was just Xbox and Xbox 360, like that was easy to remember. But like now I'm just like, which one do I have? One. I have an Xbox One. That's what I have. I mean, I still have a 360 and my original Xbox, but you know, it's frustrating, like the way they did that. So it's not surprising that they don't have anything planned for the future.
I mean, it's Microsoft. It's always Microsoft. You throw a whole bunch of fucking money at it. You dominate honestly, for a while.
Computer hardware is so cheap now. That it's like, I mean, you could stick to, you don't need a console. Like, if it's just, like, computer-style gaming that you want, like, you know, anybody can have a gaming PC now, you know, for the price of what you would spend on a new console, you know, $700-$800, and you've got a fairly decent gaming PC, you know.
This is true. This is very true. And you know what? Fine. Let them. Microsoft go off. Like make. I mean, if they made all of their platformers PC games, that's okay. I'm okay. Like, I mean, I'm not
at this point. What are their key platformers? Like, what are their exclusive games?
Just Halo. Like,
that you
I don't
have to have.
None. There's none. Like, I have an Xbox, and the only reason why I have it is the once or twice a year where they have exclusive titles, like the Indiana Jones title, which I just found out is coming out in March or April for PS5. Like, okay. Like, they don't have anything. Like, everything that they have is a universal title, like the EA Sports games. Yeah. Like, you know, they don't have anything like they used to have Call of Duty and stuff, but they don't have that anymore. And most people play that stuff on the PC. If they want to play it in an Xbox style, they'll play it on the PC. Like, and that's the thing. It's like, I'm not a PC gamer. Like, I don't PC game because it's just not my thing. Like, I'm a console guy. Like, I'm a hardcore console guy. And the two consoles that have continually proven to be worthwhile to me are anything that Nintendo brings out and PlayStation.
Yeah.
Because they actually care about their hardware as much as they care about the software.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, right? Like, PlayStation does minor tweaks to their hardware, but most of the time it's just computing power, right? It's computing power and storage and the ability to like truly bring revolutionary graphics to a console, right? Yeah. Like, so much so that PCs, like even the top PCs, can't compete with a PS5. Like, they just can't. Like, the way that they've managed to pack that thing with so much power. Like, and it's not just like, so like the PS thing is not just, it's not just a gaming system. Like, I know many people that have PS5s that it's everything for them. It's their
it's their entertainment device. Yeah.
Exactly. It's their 4K Blu-ray player.
It's the only Blu-ray player I have.
See? And it's a 4K player too.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't just play Blu-rays, it plays 4Ks. Like it has to, because it runs off of 4K discs. It runs off of UHD discs. So like all of this stuff is all kind of like, it's all like it's designed to be an entertainment center, right? Whereas Xbox is like, Like, it's just like Microsoft. It's fucking jaunty, stupid, cheap-ass, half-measured bullshit.
I just looked it up. Like, their exclusive list is, like, four things, and the only one worthwhile is Halo, and it very much seems like that exclusivity is going away. And, like, Forza is listed on the exclusive list. And I feel like anybody that's really, really into Forza probably has a, like, hella cool gaming PC with, like, you know, the steering wheel and, like, all, like, I don't hear a lot of people that I work with talking about playing Forza. You know what I mean?
Not at all.
Yeah, it's, like, you gotta be pretty hardcore into that kind of game. So, yeah, it very much seems like Microsoft is going that way. Like, I think you're right. The way of Sega, you know, where it's like, we're going to focus on what we know we can do and just publishing shit for other people because like the cons. And I mean, that's going to leave Sony and Nintendo as the like lone console people. So, but I mean, with how easy and like not truly expensive Steam Decks are, like I understand that, you know?
Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like
and those things are fucking, I mean, that's powerful hardware.
Yep, they are super powerful. Like, and like PC guys, I know, like the few PC guys I know, oh, they're insufferable. God, they are like, they're like, you know, when people talk about gamers, they're not talking about gamers. They are literally talking about PC gamers. Those fucking guys. And it's just guys too. Fucking assholes. Anyways, but the guys that I do know that do PC, they all have like it sounds weird, but they all have like two or three Steam Decks because like they all love to have like you know, Steam Decks have certain particular uses for them. But I've seen them in action. Things like Splatoon and Minecraft. Jesus Christ. Like, these things move fast. They are, the only thing that I feel is weird is that if you don't get a $500 one, if you don't spend the money, those things get super, like, I played around with one with Splatoon, and I'll tell you, dude, those things get super warm super quick. Like in an uncomfortable way, like in a way that you don't want to fuck around with them. Like, oh, no, it's fine. I'm like, no, it's not. I feel like I'm going to lose my fucking hands at a certain point because that's how hot they get. But if you get the more expensive ones, the ones that you spend $500 on, I think part of it is the heat shielding and the displacement of the heat is so good that you don't feel it. But on the cheaper ones, oh, you feel it. You feel it a lot. But anywho, Steam Decks are like, I think that they are like,
I mean, like with the 1 terabyte with the 16 gig is like $700.
Yep.
I mean, and what's Series X is probably $550.
Yep.
So like you're literally talking about something with pretty much the same capabilities that's portable.
Yes. And here's the other thing is that those Steam Decks have an HDMI cable or entry where you can actually just hook them up onto your and they have Wi-Fi capability or Bluetooth capability, so you can literally hook them up to your TV and then just get a Bluetooth enabled controller, a generic one, and you're playing on your big screen. So you like literally what the Switch does, you can do on a Steam Deck and not have to worry about it. Like that's kind of pretty amazing, right? Like, and I feel like Xbox has seen it and the writing's on the wall, like all Microsoft shit. They didn't do it properly. So now you have this whole thing of like now it's probably going to be Steam. Like that's the next evolution, right? Like if you want to do PC, you want to do Microsoft, you're gonna do a Steam Deck. You're gonna do like Steam.
I mean, because
that's
what I would do.
Yeah, if I was a PC gamer, yeah, absolutely. But I'm not. I'm a Nintendo PS guy, and I've always been. And I've always dabbled in the Xbox. Yeah. Like I have an Xbox. Like
Xbox was for Halo. Like that's yep. the only reason I ever got an Xbox. It's the only reason I kept getting an Xbox. And you know, there's a reason after the Xbox One I didn't go up. Like I didn't follow the next generation, and I, you know, I won't go any further. Because A, the Halo games stopped really being worthwhile. And like I have a PS5 for many reasons, but specifically because Spider-Man 2 is PS5 exclusive. Mm-hmm. I definitely wanted to play that game. I got a PS5. You know? Well, like it's the reason I got a PS4 for the first Spider-Man game. You know, it's I'm much like you. Like I was a Nintendo kid and then became a PlayStation kid, and you know, have still been relatively in the Nintendo game. And the Switch really brought me back to Nintendo. And I've played more Switch games since I got my Switch than I've played anything. So
yeah, you know, to which I'm like. I completely understand because this is my final thought on Nintendo, which is that they are, like, for better or for worse, they are the Disney of gaming.
Yeah.
Their style is timeless. You can play any, like, the thing about a Nintendo game is that it doesn't fucking matter what year you play it. There is a timeless charm to anything that you play.
Like even when you play Mario 64 and you're like, oh my God, this is so blocky. Like it still has that appeal to it, you know? Like
exactly.
Just their stuff, like their in-house stuff. It just, you know, like I recently it was a upgraded version of Super Mario RPG. But like I just finished that on my Switch, and like the gameplay was, from what I understand, essentially the same. It's just, it looks better, but it's still just like, oh yeah, this holds. Like go. I mean, if you can get it, go back and play some of the Paper Mario stuff from previous consoles. Like I still play stuff on my Nintendo DS. I talked about just buying a Game Boy Advance. If it weren't something that was going to like eat up a tremendous amount of money in batteries, I'd probably buy an OG Game Boy. But like, you know, those didn't have rechargeable elements to them. So
it did not. It wasn't
and you couldn't play them in the dark.
No. You could. You had to get an attachment, and that attachment never fucking worked.
Yeah,
never worked.
Nintendo just has it down. I mean, I texted you yesterday. I was like, oh, by the way, I bought Mario and Luigi Brothership, and I've been playing that. And like, if you like the Mario RPG, Paper Mario, or what was the other one? The Mario Luigi, like, Game Boy Advance and Game Boy DS games, where you kind of do that RPG element, like the turn-based battles. I can't think of the... But it is those... It's that... Like, it's a continuation of that. It's very turn-based, and you get to explore things. The one thing that kind of irked me is, like, right after the first mission in the game, you're given a choice of where to go next, and it tells you, like, what you choose could affect the gameplay going forward. And those things are, like, I'm such an anxious person that kind of knowledge drives me bananas. Because I'm all the whole time, I'm like, what would be different if I had chosen this path instead of this path? And I realize that could add to like the future gameplay, but it's also like, man, like I'd rather.
I don't want to have to replay this game.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, it's fun. The one thing it has that Mario RPG didn't have was a fast forward button. So there, if you played those games, you know there's a lot of conversation. Like you've got to talk to people and listen to their fucking stories. And I hate that. I'm more of a like I just want to be in the game and playing. But then I also get frustrated when I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's because I didn't really listen to the people that I talked to. I was just like, go. I don't want to do all this. But yeah, it's like, if you're looking for a new Switch game to play, Brothership's a lot of fun. And I've only been playing it for about 3 or 4 days. And I'm really digging it. So,
okay. All right. So we've got a couple of things that we can talk about. I feel like, and we've got a limited time, I take it, because you've got that hard out, right? Or do we want to just continue to talk?
I think my only hard out is Ripley.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. So what
right now she's sitting in my lap sleeping. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, well then why don't we talk about Creature Commandos and then we'll close out with Skeleton Crew. Okay. Unless you have enough. Unless you have some more stuff.
I don't think so. The only other thing I've been watching is, well, I told you I started watching Bookie, and like I'm excited for you to catch up on that, because man, that show, it's so wild. So much fun.
Yes.
The only other thing, I started rewatching I think it's Tubi, or I forget. One of those free TV things has the Drew Carey show now, and I've been rewatching the Drew Carey show.
Okay. That's always a fun dive into sitcominess that's not sitcom. That's like this like weird in-betweenness of sitcom-y. I like that show. I like that show too. And
yeah, it's weird that it was so unavailable for so long. Mm-hmm. Like, and apparently it was just a music thing, which, I mean, I kind of get a lot of shows from that era, like Scrubs, they had to like go back and change a lot of the music when it went to streaming. So, but yeah, it's, you know, if you just put it into your whatever search, it'll tell you what it's playing on. And like, it's worthwhile. It's unfortunately on whichever service it is. Like, they don't have the best platforms. Like,
no,
you know, it sucks because like Netflix probably has the best interface. One of the best. Netflix and Peacock, but Netflix has nothing on it. Nobody watches Peacock. And then everybody else is just kind of shit. Hulu's okay, but Hulu's so crowded, man. When I boot up Hulu, I'm just I just want to get to what I've been watching. It's like two pages of fucking like, here's what we think you should watch. I'm like, can I just get back to what I was watching? Like, I don't need all this. But anyway, Max, which has an okay interface. A Creature Commandos. That was, we're going to spoil it. What a fucking sad ending, man.
Oh, Jesus. What a sad ending. Like, I feel like. So I think this sets the tone for what moving forward, I feel like this is a preview of the tone that we're going to get from James, where stakes matter and things are going to be sad. And they're really going to be sad. Like, there's not going to be like this whole thing of like, oh yeah, you know, we were just we were just kidding. Nina's actually alive. No, Nina died. And like, to make it worse, like the reason why she's dead is because of one of her best friends. And it's something that they don't even have. They can't even deal with this. Like, they can't even deal with the bride's like the complications that has occurred for the bride this season. Like, it just, like, you know, Nina dying is not just sad, but it's like tragic, because then you realize, like, you get her story told throughout that this particular episode, and it's literally the sad. Like, you thought that Weasel was sad. Like, yeah, it was just almost like, hold my beer, you know. It was really, really, really wild to see how far he went and how far the stakes matter, because it may have not have mattered in the grand scheme of things with all of with the outside universe, but inside, between these like four people, it absolutely matters.
Yeah. I watched the finale twice. Both times I don't want to say I was moved to tears, but I was definitely moved. I'm excited that there is somewhere to go going forward, but it's also like knowing that fucker Frankenstein's monster lives and like Nina's dead, and you know, Waller just, you know, the whole thing was fucked. They made the wrong decision off bad information, and you know, I don't know. It's upsetting, but also exciting that we know there's somewhere else for this to go.
It's not going to tread water, which is what I ultimately hope for in any TV series, is like, you know, don't tread water. Like, make it so that we have a distinct ending, but not only a distinct ending, but like, either you know where the ship is headed, don't know. And I love that the Creature Commandos gives me both of those things. Is that I don't know where it's going, but I absolutely know that there's a purpose, right? You know, it is, and a new squad. Like, you know, Creature Commandos, like, they've evolved. There's, like, you know, the people that we started with are not the people that we're ending with, which is surprising. Go ahead.
And we did get the return of a character we weren't sure we were going to see again. Although, I mean, he was a robot. So,
yeah,
the fact that G.I. Robot is still there isn't a huge surprise. I appreciated the upgrade. I thought that was kind of cool. And it's exciting to see, like, it'll be cool to see where that character goes next. Yes. But like, and what new characters they bring in. It's a weirdly low key but perfect, like, official start to this gun DC universe. Gives me a lot of hope for Superman and a lot of hope for Peacemaker, which is the, you know, well, Suicide Squad is, or the Suicide Squad is the official real start of the gun universe. But
yes,
for the most part, there's probably some stuff in that isn't officially canon, but you know, whatever. It was so damn good. Like, better than it had any right to be, really.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it also came from the fact, it should surprise no one that James Gunn wrote every episode.
Yeah.
Like, literally wrote every episode. So it doesn't, like, the quality of the show, I feel like, doesn't, like, that doesn't belie the quality, because, like, I don't think that there's anything that Gunn has done that he hasn't put himself fully into. Like every single piece of his Every single thing that he's ever written, it's not half measures. It's full on right into it. Like, you know, like we talked about how much we loved the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special. And it's because he wrote it and he cared about it. It wasn't like a half-assed thing, right? It wasn't like the Star Wars holiday special, right? It was something that he actually cared about. And I feel like Creature Commandos is like he actually cared about it. Like just like the Peacemaker, he actually cared about it. So the quality is such that I think that even because it's an animated series that many people will not watch, that he allowed himself to take risks, like big risks, and like made it a series that I kind of love because characters die. Like there's a huge amount of empathy that he gives to you to characters. It's a great piece of like long form writing, because it's like, you know, at the end of the day, it's 7 episodes. So it's about like a 2.5 hour animated series. If you
dropped
off the credits, both the opening and closing credits for all of the other episodes, and you meld them together.
It's a movie, you know, and it works. Like it's definitely bingeable. But it also worked as that short form week to week kind of like, I can't wait to see what happens next. You know, it's a show that also can reward like revisiting. There's definitely stuff in it that you're not necessarily going to catch the first time. There's things that will pay off later that like when you know what's going to happen, watching from the beginning again, like you're going to catch certain things. It's an excellent piece of just comic book entertainment. And, you know, I know technically it's the start of 2025, but you know, it started in 2024, and, you know, considering we started 2024 with Madam Web and we ended with things like the back half of the superhero 2024 was truly an incredible thing. Like The Crow aside, truly an incredible thing. Like once you get to Deadpool Wolverine, it's just, well, holy shit. Like they're doing this. Like if you lump Star Wars into that, which we'll talk about in a minute, like, yeah, it was like all of this stuff we thought like might be on its dying legs and still doesn't have the pulling power that it had, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. It's still like they all ended on incredible highs for me. And since we're talking, you may not have seen it yet, but since we're talking about Max and DC and all of this stuff, real briefly, one, Gunn's taken a lot of shit for the fact that, like, oh, well, Superman and Lois doesn't exist as a show because of James Gunn, which I don't think is entirely true. The CW definitely, like, with its new, the powers that be at that station, did not want any more superhero shows. So I think that's a big reason why that show went off, because and I don't think Warner Brothers wanted to foot the bill for the show streaming wise, which is fine and understandable. Adventures of Superman, an animated show I've talked about how fucking great it is. Another season coming, like that's been confirmed, I think, by the cast. Yes. And also, a new season of Harley Quinn started this week.
Yes, it did. So much so that I do need to catch up on the rest of the fourth season or the third season, and then go into the fourth season.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised by, but not surprised by, because
third season's uneven. I think I talked about it when it was airing.
Yes, you did.
This season starts off really, really strong and a lot of fun. I don't like if we're only one episode in. I think Kite Man or Kite Man was a lot more fun than season three of Harley Quinn, and we'll see what season four brings. But they definitely feel like they definitely feels like they recognized that they strayed too far from what they were doing really, really well last season and are trying to pivot back to that. But just to say that, like, Gunn's taken a lot of shit for, quote, what he's allowing in this new DC. And I'm like, I just don't think he should be taking the hits there. I think, honestly, if it's financially makes sense for Warner Brothers, which is not really his decision, and it's of quality, that I don't think he's putting the kibosh on anything. A live action, big budget Superman show, when they're trying to pivot that character towards the movies, probably doesn't financially make a lot of sense for Warner Brothers. No. So whereas like having an animated presence, a Superman show that's not tied into any of that is not like, oh, this is of quality and financially it makes sense for us. This stays, like, because we can produce it for X amount of dollars, you know. That Superman and Lois show, like, I'm not kidding when I say the doomsday in that show is better than what we got in the Zack Snyder Batman Superman.
Oh God, who's and, not even doomsday?
Yeah. And that's on television. So while I know it probably didn't cost nearly as much as what it did for the movies because technology advances, still a pretty penny. Like, the budget was a big reason that show had to go, unfortunately, because Warner Brothers was not going to solely foot the bill. It was a shared expense. So, yeah, it's, yeah, all that to say that I think Gunn's taken some hits. About some things that have had to go. And I mean, we're still getting a sequel to the Batman. Like, the Penguin exists under James Gunn's, like, it's not under that banner for
the yes.
DCU, but like it's still something that exists. We're getting quality things if it makes sense to them, you know? And yeah, Yeah, I'm almost tempted to tell you, watch a catch-up video for the last season and just start with this season.
Just start with this season? Okay.
There was some good stuff last season, but yeah, it was not what it was in season two. Gotcha. Hopefully they'll get the magic full-on back for this season. Kite Man, what? Though. Oh my God. Did you ever catch up with Kite Man? I don't remember.
No, I didn't, because the quality of such, which like you had told me about with what's her name, with Harley Quinn, I thought was going towards would be the same with Kite Man.
No.
And like, I feel like the reason why Harley Quinn, now that I've watched Bookies, like I watched the first season and a couple of episodes of this season of Bookies, I now know why, because Dean and Chuck Lorre's like mind was focused on getting this other show started, because you can see like it's made around the same time. So the dip in quality makes sense to me now that I watch, when you watch that first season of Bookies and just how like I don't even know how to explain that until like we get into a full discussion of it, but it's like the best use of the exact thing that makes Harley Quinn special, which is empathy for scumbags. That's the only way I can put it, is that you just have just enough empathy for these scumbags to make it super interesting and fun. And that, like, it occupies the same kind of low stakes but high stakes kind of ephemera that Harley Quinn does. So it makes sense to me that the quality dipped because they were so focused on this other thing. But now that they've had that time in between, that makes sense.
I'm going to spoil the premise of the season premiere of Harley Quinn. Okay. It's not a big deal, but like her and Ivy basically get called on the carpet for like never doing anything anymore. They literally just sit at home and hang out with each other, which is honestly like the show kind of gets to this conclusion of like, hey, this is kind of what healthy couples do. Like they don't need to
yes.
like
go out.
They can, yeah, they can just sit at home in their pajamas. And like, it's kind of weird that you need other people to validate your relationship by going out in public. But they kind of get called on the carpet for that. Harley feels some kind of way. So she decides they're going to crash this event that's being held in Metropolis to honor Superman. They're opening a Superman museum. So she convinces Ivy that they're going to go crash this event, partially because at some point, I think in season 3, Harley rescued Superman and never got a thank you. So she's going to crash his event because the asshole never thanked her for saving his life.
Oh my God.
And like just what ensues is it's madcap. It's funny. And it's also, they do what the show really does best in painting characters in lights you don't often see. So this like sad sack version of Superman who like just doesn't, it's not that he doesn't want this life. It's more that like he doesn't want to just be this person. So like everybody's celebrating him and he's just like sitting on the roof of the building, like eating snacks by himself and just being sad about it. Like sad boy Superman is really, really funny. It's pretty ingenious what they do just with that premise. And yeah, the show is so smart about the way it approaches the characters that I don't know. I can't get enough of it. The one thing that the season premiere is missing is the ancillary characters. But part of that is because several of them are in the Kite Man show. So like, I think they just wanted to focus on Harley and Ivy and, you know, it just kind of is it, but for it not to need King Shark or, you know, any of those other characters to kind of like spruce up the comedy is really ingenious. Plus, they're not in Gotham. They're in Metropolis. So I don't know if the whole season's going to take place in Metropolis, which would be really interesting. But yeah, the first episode, it's definitely, but it's worth it for Sad Boy Superman. It's just, it's pretty funny.
All right. Like I'll definitely have to catch up and report back.
And Diedrich Bader's in it for like a minute and a half as coming back as Bruce Wayne. And like, oh my God, man. Like that Batman episode is still probably where they go in his head is probably like the pinnacle of this show.
One of the best Batman, like ephemera, like getting understanding Batman better than anybody. Like,
and also that. Still being funny. Like it's pretty, when this show hits, it really, really hits. And this isn't like top tier of this show, but it is after a kind of what I thought was a lackluster previous season. They really do kind of start out on the right foot with the season premiere. So, I'm anxious for you to catch up. Last season definitely had its moments. And I probably, if I went back and revisited it, I would have a little bit more patience with it. But her, like, doing the Harley Quinn as a good guy, it was just really, it didn't work for me. But at the same time, like, that's what that character, much like Deadpool, has, like, pivoted to. And it's kind of, as a, like, an OG fan of the character, it's kind of frustrating. I understand she was never, like, even in the OG cartoon, she was never the bad, bad guy. But, like, she definitely was always a bad guy. So this, like, misunderstood thing, like, it's really just kind of frustrating to see when you just want to see her played as, like, this minor agent of chaos. Maybe not Joker level, but, you know, she's out here just being crazy and having fun and still also not a good guy. So...
good things. Like, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Like, now that I know that it's been, like, you know, it's confirmed.
We didn't talk last week. We didn't talk about Abbott Elementary, Always Sunny. Did you watch the crossover?
Yes. Oh, hell yeah. Like, I watched, this week's episode too. That's something that I didn't like. That gave me life. Talk about, like, the only disappointing thing is that it wasn't a two episode and they didn't bring Sunny back for the opposite side of things. I did love, like, I was worried about it because of the, like, we can talk about it, I guess, right now. Like, I was worried, like, my biggest worry was that the Sunny side wasn't going to be as sharp and bitey as you think that it should be. But, man, like, that, yeah. That definitely, that the crossover was as perfect as you would hope it was going to be. Like, at least for me. What about you?
I thought it was, I haven't watched Always Sunny in years, but I mean, those characters are still those characters. I think they did play it perfectly. Like, everybody got the amount of time that I feel like they should have gotten. Like, nothing was too, like, focused, like, too much time with any single one of those characters. And you got just enough of, like, who they are that it wasn't, like, overwhelming. Because especially if you're not overly familiar with that show, like, those characters can seem absolutely unbearable. Like, just, like, oh my God, they're deplorable human beings.
absolutely. But everybody got teamed up with the people that you needed them to get teamed up with. Dennis, like the moment I knew it was okay was the first moment with Dennis. When Dennis realized there's cameras and he goes, I'm going to be behind the scenes. And, like, is just literally gone for the entire fucking episode. At that point, it was like,
He has two scenes, like one at the beginning and one at the end. And that's it.
And then Frank being teamed up with what's his name? Mr. Jesus Christ, I can't think of the janitor's name. Being teamed up with him, and then, like, and Mr. Eddie over the gardening and what happened there. Jesus Christ. And then
like, Charlie kind of just being Charlie around, because it's like, oh, wait, he actually can't read.
He can't read. Like, literally, because that makes sense. Like, all these years, we never realized that Charlie was illiterate, but that totally makes sense. And then them helping him to learn how to read at a third grade, like at a second grade or third grade level, is great. But the best, I feel like the best is Mac getting teamed up with what's her name? The principal. What is her? Good Lord. What is her name? I can't even think of her name now. It's not Janine, because Janine is. Ava. Getting teamed up with Ava to try to get her to, like, because they're so similar, her and Mac are so similar, but having Ava take a one up on Mac at every single moment was just kind of wonderful. Was just, like, super wonderful to see, because you know me, I don't like Rob at all. But to see him so being able to bend the knee and take this particular kind of thing on, and then D, of course, being D and trying to do what she does,
going after Mr. Eddie and
Eddie,
having them kids make like the Valentine's Day cards. Yeah,
exactly.
It's really funny. It kills me because I really think you'd enjoy Mythic Quest. But like, I totally get it that because he can be completely unbearable.
So. Yeah, he's just like the moments that I saw him on, like until he got teamed up with Ava, like I just wanted to punch his face. Like I literally just like, I fucking don't like you, bro. Like you are the biggest bro in the world. Like it's wild to me to think that Quinta Brunson and him and Rob are friends. Like so much so that they created this idea of like the volunteers, like this was them working together. Like it wilds me out to think that because he's such a fucking But anyways,
I wonder how much of that is this persona that you just see that he's putting out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could see that. But I mean, the TV show. Okay, so like the Wrexham, the Wrexham thing. Like those first three episodes that I saw, he is such an insufferable fucker.
But don't know that, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, would he be buddies with Ryan Reynolds if that's how insufferable he really was? You know what I mean? Like, if that's just the persona that you're seeing, like, I'm trying to think of who is it that we never really got to see who they really are. Man in the Moon.
Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
So few people knew who Andy Kaufman really was that it's hard. Like it's very easy to, if somebody's like, yeah, I Andy Kaufman was around when I was growing up, hated him. Absolutely hated him. It's easy to see why, because the only thing he ever showed you was somebody who was just like beyond, like he was insufferable. Like it's like, oh my God, man. Like turn it off. Like I can see that being just like, I'm so uncomfortable with people knowing who I really am that when the camera is on, this is what you're seeing. I think Ryan Reynolds is like that, but he's charming instead of insufferable. And so we let it slide. I don't think he's always that charming a person. Like, he definitely, you know, has sides to him. But he's so carefully curated this public persona that's who he has to be when the camera's on. I mean, a lot of people are like that, but they want to be likable. And so that's what happens. I think he's more comfortable being unlikable. And so that's what you see. Because so much of the characters he's played, I don't know that he's ever played a likable character.
No, he's never.
Watch Mythic Quest and you're just like, I fucking hate this guy. Like, and every time you start to like him, he gives you a reason to hate him. And I feel like that's definitely, like, that's purposeful. He's comfortable with you not liking him. That's where he's comfortable. So that's all he gives you.
Okay.
And maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't think that's a wrong pitch. That could
be. But I do understand why that's so like oppressively, like just like I don't want to watch somebody I don't like. And I don't know what it is about me that I'm drawn to stuff like that, because I mean, we've talked about BoJack, not Rob McElhenney's, but in that kind of way where it's like BoJack Horseman is such an unlikable figure. Like he's just a deplorable character. Like, and every time he tries to do something, that makes you think maybe he's not so bad. 5 minutes later, he's reminding you that he's a piece of shit. And, like, I'm, for some reason, drawn to that. And can, like, I don't want to say see through it, because I don't think there's anything to see through. But, like, I know, like, what they're getting at with that.
Yeah. No. I mean, look, I think it says how effective that show is that I can only take, like, only Sonny, like, to talk about, like, you know, Mac.
I can't watch it. Like, I made it to, like, the first four seasons or so. And, like, yes, there were things that were very funny. But, like, the more deplorable they got, specifically, like, Mac and, what's his name? Not Charlie Day, Dennis. Glenn Howard. Yeah, Dennis.
Yeah, Dennis.
The more deplorable they got, the more I was like, I can't watch this, man. They're just horrible people. Like, Charlie's an idiot who's kind of just, like, yes, he's not a good human being, but he's too dumb, really,
dumb. Yeah.
And Dee is awful, too, but, like, you know, it's just those two specifically are so connivingly awful. That I can't do it, man. Like, I don't, when they do succeed, it upsets me.
It really does. The only person that I really truly love is Frank. And Frank, it's because he's an old man that's literally a degenerate. And he knows that he's a degenerate and he doesn't care. Though I do love the, like, It's weird because there are certain pockets of this show, because I watched up till about, I think, like, I haven't watched anything beyond season, like, 14, right before the pandemic. Like, I think I watched everything up until the pandemic. And the thing about the show is that, like, it was like this watching from a distance, it's okay. It's when I get involved with it that I like, if I look too closely at it, that's what pisses me off. It's the whole thing of Mac and Dennis, right? Like Charlie and Dee and Frank, I don't have problems with, because they each are fallible and they don't have an arrogance to them that, like, they're not okay. Like, this is the thing between the two versus the other three. Is Frank D and, for my money, Frank D and Charlie are truly stupid. Like, they're dumb. They're dumb in the way Coen Brothers characters are dumb.
Yeah.
Like, they truly are dumb. They don't, Charlie, like, literally is a person that can't read. Frank is just dumb and has managed to get through his life and not be dead. Right. And then D has never opened up a book long enough to read two sentences, because she's always been given
They're kind of dismissible, sounds bad, but they are easily dismissible. Yeah. It's like, if those were if you interacted with those people in your everyday life, you would just be like, yeah, whatever. But, like, when you come across a Dennis or a Mac, it's like, this motherfucker is trying to get over on me with some shit. Like, knowingly trying to con me. And not like I fell into some stupid trap with an idiot, you know, on either side of a fast food counter or in some kind of, like, clerk situation where it's like, oh, I'm dealing with a moron. Like, so, like, this will be a funny story I get to tell. You know, like, listen to what this idiot did. Whereas Mac and Dennis, it's just like, you're like, it's like this filth that they care. It's like, ugh, it's so, like, you're just so shitty. Like, you're always trying to find some kind of thing to like, just get over on people. And I'm completely with you. They make it difficult to watch that show. But, like, Glenn Howerton, like, has also not, like, in the things he's done that were kind of bigger, he's also played similarly that kind of unlikable character.
Yes.
And I think they're kind of just comfortable in that. And it gets hard to separate that. So
it really does. Like, it really does. Like, Glenn Howerton, I don't like, both him and Mac are the kind of people that you just kind of like, oh, really? Really? You guys, like, I can't watch AP Bio, even though everybody has told me it's a great show, because he's the lead.
Yeah, he's such a piece of shit in that show, but it's so funny, man.
But it's also like I read the blog line, and he plays a fucking Harvard, like a guy who got fired from, and that makes exactly the kind of sense. He's the Ivy League fuckbag. I want to say a word, but I won't say it. That you just want to punch in the face. Like, you just literally want to punch in the face. And so it's like him versus Patton Oswalt, like in a comedy series where Patton Oswalt is like a genuinely good dude, I couldn't deal with. It's one thing to watch something like Vice Principals, where Danny McBride and Walton Goggins are going after one another. Like, that shit's funny to me, because I think at the end of the day, I know Walton Goggins and Danny McBride are not those people, and they're characters, and I've seen the facade lifted from them. And that's what makes those shows so fun, is because they are performances. I don't see Glenn Howerton and Rob McElhenney, like you said, they're playing versions of themselves. They're basically being Hollywood stars, right? Like, the worst thing about a Hollywood star is that people think that they're just playing a persona, which I feel like they are. So it's like that kind of sector of comedy. I'm just like, no, I don't need this.
Yeah.
There's so much shit that I could watch that I doesn't involve these two assholes that
I understand that. So
yeah.
He's not the draw. I mean, he is fun for me, fun on Mythic Quest, but he's not the draw. Like, Danny Pudi is just so fucking good. The guy from Always Sunny, that's the guy they're always fucking over, the red-haired dude, I can't think of his name. Yeah, like, he's a big part of Mythic Quest. He's really good. It's the ancillary characters in Mythic Quest are so great and so fun that, like, that makes the show. I completely get it.
Well, like, I want to see it because, like, I know that, like, I'm trying to gobble up everything. I know it sounds weird, but I'm trying to gobble up everything that Christine Milioti did. And I know that she's in it, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can literally watch her one episode completely separate from everything else. So,
yeah. I mean, there's like so many, like the thing is that it's on my radar. Trust me, because when you have people like Anthony Hopkins, William Hurt as guest stars, I'm like, okay. But then you also have guys like
Anthony Hopkins is just a voice. So it's hard to say, okay. Like, he's literally just a voiceover, but it's still really great when he starts and you're like, is this fucking Anthony Hopkins? The William Hurt is also, you have to watch it in conjunction with another episode, but they're both standalone enough that you watch the first episode and then you can watch that episode and really get the feel for it, because the William Hurt episode is, it's funny, it's sad, it's everything. But it only really means something if you know the journey of the two main characters in that episode, which is starts in a previous episode. So,
okay. Well, I mean, it's definitely like that one sent, like, you've talked about it for so long and with such praise. And I think that the thing that you had mentioned to me that hooked me was that it's Silicon Valley light. I think it's kind of what you've said. It's like Silicon Valley adjacent. And I can't go back to Silicon Valley because I know, like, it's just, there's too much problematic bullshit in there. But when
characters are just like, oh, it turns out they are. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, where they're trying, at least one of them was trying to play a quote nice guy, and you find out in real life he's just like not a great person.
Yeah.
And but then you like you have people like Rob McElhenney who only plays like the just the kind of person you don't want to be around. And does it like even so much so that that's his, that's who you think he really is, because when the camera's on, that's what he's doing. But not like you can't really find a like, oh, Rob McElhenney's a real piece of shit story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Like that's the thing is that, but also everything like, so the weirder part about everything is that even though they have this huge show, all four of them, with the exception of, or like all four of them, with the exception of DeVito, lead very private lives. You don't know much about them.
Yeah.
Right. Like, even though,
I mean, you would not know that Rob McElhenney and, what's her name that plays D, you wouldn't know that they were fucking married.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't know that at all. And it's kind of wild, right? Like, you're like, oh shit, they're fucking married. And
Caitlin,
I mean, and the whole
Caitlin Olsen.
And like the other thing that people don't recognize is that Caitlin Olsen is like, I don't think that they've made the connection yet that she's the person that's in this new ABC detective show.
Oh yeah, that's apparently really like really doing good. Really, really well. So
yeah, high potential. And like literally people don't realize that she's the same person from It's Always Sunny. Like I was talking to somebody about it and they were like, I was like, you do realize that when I found out that it was created by Drew Goddard, it went to the top of my list of things that I know that I need to check out because I love Drew Goddard. But when I was talking to somebody about that, I was like, yeah, it's kind of weird that Caitlin Olsen has gone from like Always Sunny to this. And like this is probably going to be her biggest fucking thing because it's such a huge hit. And they were like, what? She's Sweet D from Always Sunny. I was like, yeah, they're like, no, she's not. And I'm all, yeah, she is. And they couldn't connect those two, the performances. And I'm like, that's the wildest thing because I guess it's because she's not a public figure. Like none of them are public figures. I mean, Rob McElhenney, the only reason why he's a public figure is because of his co-owner.
Because, yeah. Otherwise he'd still just be the guy from Always Sunny. And
but also,
like,
but everybody looks at him as, oh, he's that Ryan Reynolds best friend piece of shit that kind of co-owns the thing. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah. It is kind of wild that like they're all like it's a weird thing, that high potential thing is like, but I mean that kind of speaks to who they are and their personas, and we only know them from their character personas. Yeah. So it's all say like, I am going to watch Mythic Quest. I'm just trying to find a time to actually watch it. That I feel like I can give it its just due. Because you know, it's like there's some shows that if you're not in the right headspace, you'll just instantly reject it.
It is a show like I feel comfortable saying like it, like if you text me, I could tell you like, okay, here's the standalone episodes. Like watch this episode from season one, this episode from season two, these episodes from season three. And then if you like that, it will intrigue you to go back and watch from the jump. Like, because they are literally standalone episodes. You do not have to know anything about the show proper, because most of the time it's flashback episodes to either characters that you didn't even know existed or the histories of characters that you already know that kind of gives you insight into who they are now. But you don't need to have seen the more deplorable versions of those characters to enjoy like those origin stories, you know, which is essentially what they are. Like every season there's one episode that's kind of an origin story, and then they did a pandemic episode that was them filming all just through Zoom that's absolutely brilliant and has a very like emotional core to it. But that I feel like you have to know the characters to get to that point to appreciate what the pandemic episode did.
Gotcha.
But anyway, all that to say that like the Always Sunny, like I like that it opens up that show for even more possibility for Abbott Elementary, that is, for kind of crossover stuff. But on the flip side, if once a year there was always just a crossover episode with Always Sunny, that's great. That would be great.
Yes, it would. It really would. Or other shows. Like,
yeah.
Like I love the fact that it's connected, right? Like you're now in a connected universe, right? Like Always Sunny and Abbott are within the same world, which makes me feel like it's kind of funny because it's like it's the grossest, darkest section and the brightest, most positive section of TVdom, like are within the same city, which makes it even funnier that it's Philadelphia, because that totally makes me feel like that's Philadelphia in it of itself, right? Like yeah. the best and the worst of both. So yeah, no, absolutely. Like I kind of loved it. I really did love it, and I continue to love the show because it continues to like. I feel like the best part of Abbott is that they take the best part of. It takes the best part of what we call a star, like a star turn or a guest appearance, and makes it such a good, like it takes it and it turns it into this thing that works for Abbott, but also is very in line with that particular person's persona. I mention this because have you seen this week's episode?
Yeah. Yeah.
Eric Andre.
Yeah.
As trainee, as the guest star is kind of amazing because it literally feels exactly what Eric Andre is, but also it fits perfectly within the Abbott like universe.
Yeah.
So now we know that.
Oh, go ahead. I like how downplayed his guest star thing was. I know he's not a huge star, but enough people know who Eric Andre is that you see him and you're like, oh yeah, that guy. But it was such a low key thing, you know, that he was a big part of the show, but like he only got to interact really with one character.
Yeah, absolutely. And but the character he interacts with is like the best character. Like it makes sense. Like everything about Abbott, I feel like, which a lot of shows don't get right, is the ability to ensure that it's logical. Like everything makes sense. Like it's A, B, C. Like, okay. Like I'm not saying the TV, like the station, I know, but it makes sense. Like, yeah. There's always the aha moment. Like whenever they have a guest star, it's like, okay, that makes sense. I'm not going to be mad at it because of that. And so like, you know, just continues to be like possibly the best TV show, the best comedy. It's definitely the best comedy on network television. But it's continually like within the top three best TV shows currently on air because of just how well written it is.
Yeah. And it's weird because I was definitely worried that they were going to jump the shark with the like, oh, they're officially in a relationship now, that mm-hmm. it would lose some of that. It would become so focused on their relationship, and really all it did was take away the will they, won't they thing. And their relationship is not non-existent, but it's so not really a part of the show right now.
Yeah.
That it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, they're together. And the show is not about will they or won't they get together. Now it's just about like, oh, they're in a relationship and here's everything else that's still going on. And they handled it perfectly, you know, because I get that there is that faction of people that love that Will They Won't They shit, you know, Ross, Rachel, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, there's it becomes such the focus of the show that, you know, it half of every episode is about that, and they don't want that. You know, it's more like a Seinfeld style approach.
Yes.
You know, where the relationship, even though, like, I know eventually, like, they tried it once with Elaine and Jerry and backed off after season one. But, like, it's about the characters and their journeys and not about, like, who's in a relationship, a romantic relationship with who. Because they're all in a relationship with each other.
Yes. Exactly. It broke the code. And that's the best part. Like, yeah. and I don't mind that. Like, I like, if you can find a way to get them together and not it be Jim and Pam, which is so insufferable.
Yeah.
And it not break the chemistry like Moonlighting, you know, which, man, they never should have gotten together. Like, watching the show, like rewatching the show on Hulu now, which is one of my like secret joys, is I'm going to get to the point to where they. Like, because I've watched that show 3 or 4 times. But to the point where they hook up, I'm probably not going to watch any of the other episodes, even though there are some pretty great ones. It just loses the it's so designed to be just that. The bickering and not getting together
is the
thing that works the best for that show. But this, I feel they cracked the code, right? Because they don't talk about it, or they only mention it in passing, so we don't have to see their love life. And they're not, because they're set up in such a way where
very little time is spent outside the school. And
exactly.
It, you know, and they've shared that equally, kind of like this season. There's been like Melissa and Jacob living together has been more of a thing than like the relationship between her and Mr. Eddy. Like,
yes.
I mean, so much so there's a whole episode about like the Christmas dinner, right, at Melissa and Jacob's house, and then like thinking her uncle or whatever died. That wasn't Melissa and Jacob. That was at
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
She was there. Yeah.
So, because that, Cheryl Lee Ralph that plays Barbara, doesn't she show up at the party?
Yeah, she does with her.
Yeah,
with her
man. Yeah. I was like, cause there's a whole racist thing that's going on.
Yes.
Like that whole, and none of it really had to do with, like, there was a thing with them too. And it was mostly about Ava not having a place to go on Christmas, and like there's a whole little like sweet story there too. But yeah, that they've really done a good job of keeping it mostly school centric, because that's really where the fun is, you know. It's funny because like I wouldn't say it's the show I laugh the most watching on TV, but it is this kind of like comfort food of like, oh yeah, this is really, really nice. I forgot I had started watching this, cause I don't have it on my list, but, I did, check out the new Tim Allen show that's on Fox, because Fox is really trying with their comedy. I think Going Dutch, which I mentioned before, holding strong, very funny, mostly because Dennis Leary is so great, and Animal Control is still really, really funny. Joel McHale continues to just, like, he's so great. And apparently, I listened to an interview with him. He is the reason we still have not gotten...
Yes, yeah. I was very aware.
Fucking schedule, because he apparently can't say no to things, has kept them. for a while, it was what's his name in his Childish Gambino and touring. Yeah. Donald Glover was like he was the holdup. His schedule has been open, and now it's Joel McHale who is doing too damn much. But he says soon and hopefully filming this year. But anyway, it's Shifting Gears or something like that. The new Tim Allen show.
Yeah. I watched the first episode and it was just randomly.
It's not terrible, but it's also not great. You know,
So the thing
I watched it for Sean William Scott, who's not fucking in the show.
He's in it. He's in it like 2 seconds. Here's the thing is that I respect some of the thing, like the casting that they're doing and the reason why Alan did it and the reason why he tried to exert control for certain aspects of the casting. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But the show just, it really landed flat. It really felt like, here's my theory. You really should have just done, if you wanted to do Home Improvement 2.0, you should have done Home Improvement 2.0 and just recasted everybody and just given us Tim Taylor again. Because that's what you really wanted to do, because that's what I feel this show is trying to do. And maybe it'll change. I appreciate Brenda Song, who brings some life into it, but I don't know, man. Like it fell flat for me. It's like there were moments, but ultimately it's him doing his shtick. And there's another show that I watched that I didn't talk to you about, which I liked a lot better than this show. And maybe it's because I saw like 10 episodes of it. Papa's House. Have you heard about this? The Damon Wayans show?
Yeah. With Damon Wayans. I want to check it out.
So again, another Dean Laurie show. And this just tells you how like Dean Laurie can write a show and knows this kind of shtick over whoever's written the mechanic show. But it's similar ground. It's treading similar ground. But I feel like Papa's House does it a little bit better. I don't know, man. Like you said, Sean William Scott and the supporting cast was what like kind of made me want to watch the show. And when I realized not they're not in it enough, I was like, what is this about again? Like, yeah. Why are we doing this? And the thing is that he's done like 5 shows, like what? More Power, Last Man Standing, Assembly Required, that all feel like they're the same concept as Shifting Gears.
Yeah.
Which is like a dude who like, you know, like the dude that is growing up in the woke era. Like, okay, we've seen this like 35 times, bring a good angle to it. And then it's like, oh, well, his daughter has to move back in with him. And he has a grandson that, like, you know, is on the spectrum. Yeah. Okay. There was nothing funny about that stuff with the Spectrum Kid. Like, I was like, it was actually kind of insulting to Spectrum Kids. I was like, this would have been funny, like I said, like during the Home Improvement era, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like,
I appreciate just, like, that, like, he's willing to have... like he is getting to kind of like do that thing that he's been doing. That's more,
yeah. You know,
people find insensitive, but also presenting like the opposite point of view. And he gets like, he is the butt of the joke of like, you're old in the way you think is old. And
yes,
being open to that and also still like having like, yeah, you're right. But sometimes like I kind of like my heart was in the right place. It's just I have a outdated way of thinking.
Yes,
I can appreciate that. It's just that like I'm with you. He doesn't really have it. Like, you know, and part of that is because of who he's playing off of. I don't think she's that funny. I never really have. I know that there are people that appreciate her. I'm not one of them. So yeah, like this is like if I do watch it, it'll be because I watched the first episode, so it's on my Hulu watch list. So it'll wind up playing after something that I'm actually interested in watching. It'll be like, oh, this is on your next up to watch list, and I'll be doing dishes while it's in the background. So yeah, it was not I was disappointed that Sean William Scott was not a bigger part of the show. I know he's not the name that he used to be, but it is still like you got this guy and you're not doing anything with him. And I know eventually it's going to be like, oh, those two are going to wind up together. And that's the, you know, where the show's going to go. But it's just like, I don't know, man. I don't want to see 6 episodes of you wasting this actor's potential that I know is there because I've seen this guy be great in a lot of things.
No, absolutely. And like, so here's the thing. Ultimately, it's already a hit because there's certain sector of people that are watching it and they knew this.
Oh yeah,
So
it's kind of show my dad would love.
yeah, like, and it's gonna be on for like 5 seasons. And so, like, you know, Daryl Chill Martin getting a show where he gets to be on for 5 seasons, fucking yeah, dude. Like, I'm totally for that. And I know why you did it. Like, Tim, your heart is in the right place with these people because everybody is somebody that he's worked with and he's trying to pay it forward. And that aspect of it, I fucking love. Like, I love that. Like, I love that you never forgot about people. Like, I love that. But, you know, ultimately, like, if it's not funny, I mean, okay, fine. I'm just not going to watch it. It's not me. But there is a certain sector of people that this is fucking hilarious for. And, you know, it's going to be around for a long time. Like, that's the thing that ultimately I'm like, okay, well, I guess. I mean, who knows? Maybe it'll be around long enough to where Sean William Scott and Daryl Chill Martin will actually get actual roles. And that, like, you know, maybe Jenna Elfman will actually, like, people will remember, oh shit, she's actually really fucking funny. You know, and it gives people work and it lets them quote unquote eat. But for me, it's like all the rest of his stuff that he's done is just, it's like, it was like Home Improvement was for me, like, and I don't know about you, it probably was the same for you, was like, it was a milestone for us, right? Like, that was like it was a show that was funny at the time. And I mean, like, we had a
I've
conversation
tried to
before.
watch bits and pieces of it, and I'm just
Oh,
like,
God.
I don't know why I like this show. Like, it's just not, it does nothing for me now. Like, revisiting a lot of that stuff, it just like I recently watched like a lot of like Step by Step, which was another one of those shows. Step by Step is a much better show that actually holds up pretty well. Whereas like Home Improvement just feels like stupid gags. Like it's just like, oh yeah, look at this dumb man who's, you know, like he's dumb and like just overbearing, but also look, he's right. And it's just like, eh, I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. So, it's not my thing. We didn't talk about Star Wars. Real quick, finale of Skeleton Crew. If this is the end of the show, that's disappointing. If this is only the like end of their first adventure, I think really, really good stuff.
Absolutely. No, I mean, no notes. No notes. This season, like, lands the ending.
Jude Law was meant to be in Star Wars, man.
He really was in this role. Like, let's be honest, like, has there been a more roguish, perfect turn
I mean,
since,
God,
like,
like the whole time I'm still just like I'm still kind of rooting for this guy. Like I don't want him to be the bad guy, but like he is the bad guy.
yeah, he really is. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, it just, it worked. Like, it worked. Like, and it's so sad. Like, I will say this much. It is like, if you're a Star Wars, if you claim to be a Star Wars fan and you cannot see how good this show is and how it lands, and it's probably one of the best Star Wars, purely Star Warsy, like, story that we've gotten in a long time, then there's no hope for you. You really should just stop watching Star Wars and just stick to the original trilogy and just sit there and just whatever you're doing in your own filth and like the Will Sasso meme. You know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But like, because this is like I don't know how to express how purely Star Wars this is and how wonderful it is. Like, so much so that they can like, I wrote, like, I texted something to you, which is, man, they sure do love that. Like, John Watts loved Masters of the Universe when he was a kid, because there's an entire action scene that literally feels like it, like he was like, you know what I really want to do is I want to take a suburb place, put Star Wars people in it and have them destroy places, but also like have our main characters like fly through the suburbs. Like, literally what happens in Masters of the Universe, and but it's done so cheesily in Masters of the Universe, but here, man, it's just, it's right. The tone is right. Like, everything new that they do is perfect. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't see, I'm having a difficult time with this particular section of fandom because I don't know what they want. Like, I literally don't know what they want. Like, it's like, what do they want? This is great Star Wars. Like, I understand the Acolyte, right? Okay, fine, whatever. Like, you didn't like it for whatever reasons. And like, if you had justifiable reasons that aren't racist, like, okay, fine. Like, I'm okay with it. But if you, but like, I can understand that because it's a series that was half-baked. Like, if we're perfectly honest, if I'm really honest with myself, Acolyte, there are three episodes that are truly, truly fascinating and interesting, and the rest could be just dumped, right? Like, there are certain things that they should have done in that series, but here, it's literally what you dream of when you're talking about Star Wars storytelling. High adventure, fun, stakes, like, I don't know, man, like a great, a fascinating lead, like not even a fascinating lead, a fascinating co-star, right? Because I mean, literally he is Han Solo, but not Han Solo, right?
Han Solo without the turn to good, you know?
Yeah. Just money, right? Like, I don't know, man, like the ending was perfect with the final climactic battle. Like, the fact that he doesn't die, like, spoilers, guys, the fact that he doesn't die and we know that he's gotten away is perfect, because that's exactly what happens in Star Wars. Not everybody has to die, right?
Yeah.
Like, but also, like, adds more things to the Star Wars universe, connects it to certain things. Like, if you're looking really hard, connects it to certain areas and certain sectors of Star Wars. Like the X-Wing, or the Y-Wing. Well, the Y-Wing is the perfect example, or is it the T-Wing? I can't remember what it's called, but totally connects it to Rebels. Like the era that it's being told in is, like, you know, it's wonderful. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know what more people want from this fucking show.
Me neither. Like, I, it's only disappointing if this is the end of it. Like, because there's, it feels like there's more fun to be had here, you know?
Oh, I absolutely think so. It really does. And I don't think that I honestly think that they're going to renew it just because they want to be in the John Watts business here. Because if you let this go, he's not in Marvel anymore.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost you a boatload to bring him back to Marvel. So, like, and I, to be perfectly honest, like, this shows me that you want him in this IP. You want him in, like, he's good with IP in a way that I feel like it worries me so much that he's no longer at Spider. He's no longer, like, after watching this, I'm like,
yeah, I've been worried about, like, the direction of Spider-Man. Sony does seem resolved to, like, no longer try to exert control over it. But we'll see. But you know, Marvel hasn't elicited a lot of confidence despite their end of year. Like it still remains to be seen, like if they can kind of like keep going in the right direction. So, I mean, we'll see in a few weeks, but yeah, it's, John Watts definitely can carve out a little niche for himself in Star Wars if that's what he wants to do. And it seems like that's what he wants to do. I don't know. We'll see. I really, really enjoyed it. It answered questions. I will say I wasn't completely satisfied with the answers, but
yes,
I think that's because like it's one of those things where you like your ideas about what it could be versus like, this is not ever what the show was trying to do, you know? And it's my expectation, not really a failure of the show. I wanted it to mean something bigger, and it's just like, the show, that's not the story the show was telling. So that's your own fault there.
But it's also good that it didn't connect. Like like after thinking about it,
it would have been just as unsatisfying if all of a sudden like Luke Skywalker shows up to save the day. It would have been like, okay.
Or like Honda and Onaka showed up, which is something that I really wanted to happen. But I mean, it's it's okay. It's okay. Like, you know, and if this is the one, like, because they've talked about paring down the TV to one show a year. If this is the show that every year we get and we watch these kids grow up a la Harry Potter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with that. So
I'm cool with that. Like, as long as the quality doesn't dip and you get John Watts to do this, I'm all
and cool. I think if it's something, I also think it, you know, it could be, could translate well to animation if it's a case of like, these kids are gonna grow up, and so it's gonna make it hard to, like, much like Stranger Things kids, it's like, well, this show comes along once every 3 years, and now they're in their 20s, and so, like, it's easier just to do it animated. I firmly believe that Star Wars animation is some of the best Star Wars, if not the absolute best Star Wars. So, like, I'm all for more Star Wars animation too, which is something we don't really have a steady stream of anymore. So, which is unfortunate because that's some really good shit. But, it was very, very fun. And much like DC and Marvel, like we talked about, like ending 2024 on a high and starting 2025 on high notes, like that's exciting, and hopefully like it holds. Like it's weird to feel like this is 2025 is a make or break year for all this stuff, but it really feels like that. Like you know, if they can't find a way, Star Wars doesn't have a film this year. They will next year, but they are filming this year. So it is a make or break year for them. Like if Mandalorian and Grogu is not good, then like that's tough to come back from. If it's not successful, it's going to be really tough to come back from. Andor will be what Andor is, and I mean that's the end of that show. So that's it'll just be what it is. And you know, we know what Marvel and DC has in store. So yeah, 2025, it's gonna be, you know, hopefully a truly great year for nerd content. So go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, including coming soon a more in-depth discussion of the finale with our X-Wing Files proper podcast, or you can go check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, which of course, because of the fires, kind of stopped dead in its tracks. But it will be ramping back up with a bunch of new content that's coming in the coming weeks, including I should be getting my eyes on to the first truly interesting movie of the year, Osgood Perkins' adaptation of Stephen King's The Monkey, which I don't know if you've seen the trailer for, but Jesus Christ, I'm so looking forward to it.
I do want to see that. I actually just finished Holly, which it has me really excited for this show that's still in the works, mm-hmm. Based on that character, and really excited for the upcoming continuation of her. Like 2024 for me was the Bill Hodges, Holly Gibney, me falling into those stories, even though it started mm-hmm. in 2023. I fell in love with that character in those stories, and I'm excited to see that journey also continue this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can totally see that. We've got a bunch of content coming out, a bunch of 4K reviews, because I've got
almost done with my what I watched in 2024 spiel. So, it took a different turn than I thought I was going to go, but mm-hmm. it is what it is. But
hey, yeah. I'm always for that. My best of 2024 is already up. So you can actually take a look at that. Should surprise nobody.
It's hard for me to write a best of list. I literally watched 14 movies in 2024. So it's just I can't do a top 10 list that also includes Madam Web, because it's one of the 12 things I watched. If I had a top, it would be my top three films, because I didn't watch enough to really make out a top 10 list, because most everything I watched was just disappointing.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that, dude. There's nothing wrong with that. All right. Well, we'll be back next week. I don't even know what the hell we're talking about next week, are we? Do we?
No. I mean, we didn't really know what we were talking about this week. So, and we wound up going for two and a half hours. So
hopefully I'll finish Bookies and we can have a full on conversation about that and a couple of other things. Maybe I will actually get to Mythic Quest. Maybe I will dive into that and kind of do three seasons.
If you watch the Kristen Milioti, that one standalone episode, mm-hmm. I really you won't fall in love with the show, because it's not a true representation of what the show is, but you will just be holy shit, what an incredible piece of writing. Anyway,
okay.
We'll see. We don't really have any. We'll see you guys next week.
Yeah,
see I was going to say, may the force be with you, but I'm like, that's not the end of this show. That's the end of the other show.
Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Cal. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, say hello together if you're with me now.